My name is Terry. I am a gratefully recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic for today. I'm also a neighbor because I'm hailing from BC, Canada. So it's great to be able, Zoom's a wonderful gift. So I get to come visit here without having to take a plane and put on a big jacket. So that's wonderful. We're in spring here. So so thanks so much for being asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope today. So I came into the rooms about 9 years ago when I was 40. It was my 40th birthday, and I don't even know what triggered it for me or where I had seen OA, but I somehow had this realization that I had a problem with food. I'm not sure if it was the closet binging, the throwing up, the exercise, the having temper tantrums when my partner wouldn't go out and get me the food that I wanted, eating my children's Halloween candy and then refilling it. Let's not forget all the Christmas chocolates that you buy. Sorry, my apologies to say a word. The Christmas gifts you'd buy and then eat and then rebuy and then eat all the way before Christmas Day. And I was really surprised when I came to that realization because I had grown up in an alcoholic home and I was never going to be an addict. I was never going to be like my parents. And so my focus was on alcohol not realizing that food was going to be my issue. Food is an issue for me because it is an issue because it's a disease. And that's just how I was made. But I know that food was a comfort for me in that home. So that's where it played itself out whenever I was feeling uncomfortable and irritable and discontented. I turned to food. So I walked into the room in a meeting, and it was about 20 minutes away from where I lived. And I met a lot of wonderful people, and there was a lot of sharing about life and day to day and lots of other things. I didn't know the abstinence, what that meant. I didn't know the steps. Those things weren't really discussed in the meeting. And so I continued to attend and was unable to stop overeating. In fact, I'd hit the drive-thru before, and then I'd hit the drive-thru after on the way home. And after a while, I just left. I just didn't think this program worked for me, not realizing that I hadn't been introduced to the program. The message, no harm to the people that were there, but the message wasn't carried to me in a way that helped me to understand what was really going on. And the amazing thing about when I left, because this is how manipulative this disease is I completely forgot that I had a problem. So I had realized I had an addiction, but when I left program, so quickly I forgot, the books went away, the books got put into, you know, donation, and I just went back to my same thing, not ever in my brain telling me, hey, you have a problem, you have a problem. So I went about going on my life, and I had suffered a separation, and I was newly on the world again, where I was, you know, dating, and I had met someone, and it was going really, really well. And I was spending the night, and I was getting up in the middle of the night, and I was eating all the food, all the stuff I'll say you could buy at a 7-Eleven, those foods out of his cupboards. And then I was hiding the empties underneath the bottom of the garbage, right? As if he wouldn't see it. Not that he would notice all this food was missing. And I would spend the weekend when his children were at their other parents, and he would be like, oh my goodness, these kids are eating all the food. And I wouldn't say anything. I would just let him blame the kids. And who knows what happened in the home. That was an amends I had to make. And I just kept doing that. And I was gaining and gaining and gaining. And so one day he was out at soccer, and I thought he was going to be gone for a long time. And so I was like literally binging on one of those foods and like crying, like, and not a pretty cry, like the snot coming out of your nose, horrible, ugly cry, just like, and I was so loud that I didn't notice that his game had been canceled. So he'd come in and he walked into this bedroom and he saw me like with the stuff and like me, like just looking horrible. And I'm thinking, he must be thinking right now, and this is why you don't date on dating apps. Like, I thought for sure he was like going to be, okay, someone's crazy. This is, I'm not doing this again. And I just like let it all out. And I just said, I have an addiction. I have a problem with food. I've been eating your food and I can't, I don't know what to do. And I need to go, you know, I need to do something. And he said, isn't there a meeting for that? And I went, yeah, there is a meeting. But I just can't go. He's like, well, I'll drive you. Let's find one and I'll drive you. And so it was the very next day that was a meeting, and it was about 40 minutes from where we were. And he drove me and he sat outside in the parking lot and waited, and he's a normie. So he has no of any kind of addictions. He's the type of person that can eat half of something and then leave it there. And it's driving me crazy why he's like, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? And so he waited outside, and I went into that meeting, and it was a 12-step focused meeting in AA, like using the big book, 12-step meeting. And I walked in and they talked about the steps and they talked about the importance of getting a sponsor. And I got a sponsor that day. So I saw someone at the end of the meeting that had raised their hand. And, you know, I was so blessed that they raised their hand. And I said, would you, you know, be my sponsor? And they said, she said, you know what, why don't you come see me? And then we'll have a talk and we'll see if it's a right fit. And so I did, and we identified my red light foods and those foods that I just couldn't. And then we identified those yellow light foods that really you put on the yellow list, but really they turn out to be red light foods. That's just the sneaky way they start us out, I think. And so, and she helped me build a food plan. And then she said, my only commitment is you have to work the steps. So we're going to work the steps. And I committed to that. And I didn't, since that day, that first meeting, I have remained abstinent. It will be 6 years in August that I will be abstinent and in active recovery, which is a really important key to that. So I was doing really well and life was, you know, going along, and I was, you know, helping out. I was giving service and in a, I'm going to say to myself, in a way for me personally, was not as much as I could have been giving. So I was, you know, doing it at my home group. I opened a new in-person group. And so I was helping with that. And then my sponsor, who was the chair of my inner group, said, why don't you be the inner group rep? That's your next step of service. You got to do that. And so I said, okay, because I had learned I got to do what my sponsor tells me. So I did that. And then I was doing that. And then they needed someone to help with retreats. And so I kind of raised my hand, but I didn't really do a lot actively with that. I was kind of just shown up, and I was still abstinent, but I didn't feel, looking back on it now, that my recovery, like my spiritual growth, I wasn't spiritually growing. I knew I was working steps 1 through 11 imperfectly every day, my morning routine, my nightly review, my checking throughout the day, all of those sorts of things. But I didn't really, I came off of my wonderful step where I was felt like I had a bit of an awakening, and then I wasn't really going anywhere. It was kind of, I was just in a holding pattern in a sense. And I was a little frustrated with that. But in October of 2019, my cousin, who is like a brother to me, who I dearly loved, had been struggling with his own addiction, and we'd been having phone calls every night. And one night, you know, he was reaching out, and I just didn't really feel like it. I just really didn't feel like it. I know I had been giving service to him because service is a part of, you know, inside and outside of our program. And I just really didn't feel like it. So I didn't answer his phone. I didn't hear from him for a week. I thought he was just really upset. And then his sister called me, my cousin, and she said that he had taken his life that night. And I fell into a really, really deep depression and guilt of his loss, and what I felt was my responsibility. And I kept going to meetings, but I was deep in a place of darkness. And I was going to meetings, I was giving my service. Then obviously a couple months later, we hit COVID and things shut down. And we moved to Zoom meetings for our inner group. And I was kind of holding on, but those were the only things I was doing. You know, I had a very busy, I work at a men's federal prison, and we had to show up to work. Obviously we had take care of a lot of humans during COVID and outbreaks and things. And it was a really, really exhausting time, And I was going to meetings and I was going to my intergroup, but I wasn't doing anything else. And I was really what I think now turning into a white knuckling abstinence. I had reverted back to that. I was just stuck and I just couldn't, I could not get out. And a year ago, I just couldn't get myself out of it. And my sponsor said, you know, you really need to focus on your service. I respect and honor, but like you need to focus on some service. And so I switched because obviously we weren't going to have conventions during COVID. So I switched to World Service intergroup rep. And I just kind of showed up blindly to what that meant, thinking, you know, hating to want to do the service and thinking, well, you know what, I could just go to this couple days where you have to do all this voting. And then I'm just going to go back to my bed. That's what I'm going to do. You know, I'm just like, sometimes service doesn't feel good. But that's that selfish part for me. It's not meant for me to feel good, right? It's meant to give service to others. So I go, and then all of a sudden I find out you have to be part of these groups for a year. I was like, what? I didn't sign up for this. So now I have to go to a group every month on some sort of committee to do something. Like, what the heck? And then I get this committee that's like the young person's committee. And I'm like, I'm in my 40s. I have young adult children, but like, I don't, what am I going to say about young people? So I was like very begrudgingly doing service. But I just kept showing up to the service and I just kept putting my hand up, even though I was like, why are you putting your hand up? You know, after you put your hand up, then you're like, why did I put my hand up? But I kept refocusing. My sponsor, kept telling me, you know, to reflect and to put your issues and your pain and your things aside and just focus on others for just this little bit, you know, whatever time we would decide and we would have a plan. And so that's what I did. And really slowly I saw my connection to my higher power really grow. And when I look back now, I can say the big thing I say all the time is service saved my life. It was a miracle for me that I even ended up liking it, which was just because I didn't have time. Life was busy for me already. And I just wanted to get home, crawl in bed and just zone out on YouTube or whatever show I was going to watch, you know, 25 episodes of in like 2 days, you know, that sort of thing. And I really saw the truth of the 12 steps in a way that I hadn't seen before. Yeah, I had been doing step 1 and 11, and of course I wasn't growing. I wasn't having that spiritual growth because I truly wasn't doing step 12 for me. And everyone is individual what that is. But for me, when I looked at, you know, a self-appraisal of myself, I wasn't doing the service that my higher power needed me to do for us to have that spiritual growth. Thank you. Is that 5 minutes left? Okay. I will move on. See, I never think I'm going to talk and I talk too much. So for me, when I picked up that service and then I did the World Service again, as I grew in my service and I felt that connection to my higher power, and I always like remember the page, let me just find it here in the big book, the very top of page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And it was that intensive work. I needed to do intensive work to be able to truly keep not just abstinence, but grow in my recovery, grow with my relationship with my higher power. And I found that in pushing myself slowly and slowly into different types of service, how more I could expand in a way. Because whenever I was uncomfortable, that for me was a way that I felt I need to go. I'm not into self-punishment or anything, but that's really where I felt that I need to go. And that's when I would attend assembly. And I was at this last assembly and we didn't have a first vice chair. I have no idea how to run an in-person convention from Canada that's in Seattle next year. And no one was raising their hand. And I just felt that little voice, a voice I would never have heard before I found the miracle of service. I would not have been attuned to it, that said, you can do that. You have no idea how, but you can learn. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It can be good enough. Just focus on good enough. And I raised my hand. And then, of course, after I was like, what were you thinking? And then it was true. I met with the former vice chair and I was like, I don't know how to do a hotel contract. And well, let's just learn. Let's just walk through it. And I was able to do it. And so for me, it again helped me grow my recovery in another way, in that I get to see people from all over the region that I would never have had the opportunity to see and hear a message that they'll share with me. So for me, the things that I want to share is that service is a key. It is the 12th step. It is what will keep that recovery and that growth, that spiritual growth. And I can't get it without it. Those promises, they never came to me for myself until I filled my life with service. That's when I got those promises. That's when I was able to make those steps and be excited about life and be able to think about my cousin and smile. And I never thought I'd crawl out of that place. I never thought I would be able to do that again. And service really saved my life. And it helped me to do that. And I remind myself that if nobody was doing it, there wouldn't be a program. If it wasn't for Bill giving service and then all the work they did that then helped Roseanne, that then helped everyone after Roseanne, I wouldn't, if there wasn't people at Region One, then I wouldn't have had it. If there wasn't people at My Seat of Skywood, there wouldn't be a program. And so that's how I fulfill that our responsibility pledge, which I love to always read. So always to extend the hand and the heart of OA to all who share my compulsion, for that I am responsible. And I define for me what I am responsible. What does that mean? And that means for me right now, giving service in this capacity. What that will look like down the road, I have no idea, because I just have this present moment. It gives me a sense of purpose and it connects me to my higher power and to my fellows. And I grow every day and I smile. And I'm the most important piece I'll end with is it has allowed me to hear my higher power in a way that I haven't before. So that throughout my day, I'm stopping before I'm engaging in something that then is going to have me have to make amends, which I hate doing. So it helps me be in the present moment and stay connected, because I'm doing the service, because when I'm in these meetings and these groups, we're saying the Serenity Prayer and we're talking in a way where we're engaging together in a way that is unity and helpful to all. And that's what gives me a high, so that in a healthy way that I can bring it throughout my work and throughout my day. I'm not big of a slogans person. I was like, yeah. But really the slogan that has defined my life now is to keep it, I have to give it away. And this is how I give it away. And maybe by me giving it away, someone else will step up in 2 years and do first vice chair, or be on the convention planning committee that we in Seattle in a group would love to have some Alaskans on our planning committee. I guess I'll end with, as long as you're not making yourself unhealthy, uncomfortable is okay. Uncomfortable in service, it's okay. It's okay to be uncomfortable and to not want to give it, but then have to give it, because it keeps you honest and it keeps you connected. And I think that's all I have to share.